From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the 1st of September, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brewers welcome the Phillies this weekend, and then it's off to Pittsburgh and New York. So where are the Packers? Well, they're off until Sunday the 10th, when they open the season with the Bears. An Indiana man was arrested for DUI. He was driving a kid's toy Power Wheels Jeep. So the visual is a grown, drunken man driving a kid's Power Wheels Jeep, traveling down the highway, giving hand signals of impending turns, which is more than some sober drivers do. And now this, radioactive wild boars in Germany. These shaggy-haired swine are known to bite and charge humans with their tusks, and oh yeah, they're highly radioactive. A study published Wednesday found nuclear weapons testing across the globe released enough fallout into the atmosphere to irradiate the wild pigs. Oh man, this has to be a movie, like Frankenstein meets Porky Pig or something. The phrase ugly American is out of the closet. Recently, we saw an American tourist climb into the Trevi Fountain in Rome to fill her water bottle. Another American scratched his name into the wall of the Roman Colosseum. And just like that, we're off to Paris, where two men who are American tourists had evening tickets to the Eiffel Tower. According to the Paris prosecutor's office, these same clowns were allegedly trapped on the tower overnight due to excessive alcohol consumption. All four people used the same excuse, but we're on vacation. Next time you look up dumb criminal in the dictionary, there'll be a picture of this crook. He wears a black cowboy hat and had three, count them, three parrots sitting on his shoulders. Then he walked into a McDonald's and robbed it. Not much chance of a mistaken identity here. On the podcast today, we have Adam Bailey, Kendall Bauer, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A good week, a good start to the month of September. NASDAQ up 3.2% this week. The S&P 500 up 2.5%, closing at 45.16. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1.4% after adding 117 points in the first day of September. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 34.8%, the S&P up 18.8%, and the Dow Jones up 6.5%. The benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury moved a little lower on the week, Adam. Perhaps a sign from some mixed economic news that maybe the Fed has a little more cover still. Signs that the economy is slowing, along with some signs that maybe it hasn't slowed as much as what many had feared.
Yeah, this week we had a fair amount of economic news. It was a mixed bag. Some good, some not so. And, you know, it kind of concluded a month of August, which was very much a mixed bag. And you try to like read in between the tea leaves on that one. And we've been on a sprint for so long, since October. And sometimes you got to pause and consolidate and catch your breath after such a long sprint. And that's partly what we saw closing out August. And that's partly what you saw in the economic data as well. The economy isn't on just an all-out sprint like we saw in previous years. We're starting to show some signs of cooling, but still a fair amount of economic momentum at our back.
And got numbers on unemployment rate, wage growth. We got numbers on consumer confidence and personal spending, a mix really of data. Kendall, in particular, the unemployment rate, you and I touched base a little bit earlier, a spike, maybe not a spike, but certainly a bump higher to 3.8%. The highest number since February of 2022. So, you know, I think normally we wouldn't consider 3.8% all that concerning from an unemployment rate perspective. A couple of reasons, potentially some noise in that data that suggests that maybe there's more going on right now than just more people losing their jobs. But, you know, again, overall, I think the labor picture potentially still showing quite a bit of nuance.
Yeah, I think interesting part of that, and we talked about this, that that's uptick from I think it was 3.5 to 3.8 may not entirely be a bad thing. There was a slight uptick, I believe, in labor force participation rate, which can indicate that people may be on the cusp of not only re-entering the labor force, but you know, maybe gaining employment.
Yeah, and I think that's the nuance that's so often missed is we had the shutdown of a pretty major trucking company in the Southwest. We had these strikes that are still going on in Hollywood. Those are all people that are looking for work. You add in that if you were an employee marginally attached to the labor force, and all of a sudden you look at it and say, well, there's a pretty good chance I could find a job if I wanted one. Maybe I'm going to start looking again. All of a sudden you could count it in the unemployment rate when you weren't counting before. And so I think there's a lot of noise when we're as low as we are on an unemployment rate. I think there's a lot of noise there.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of noise, the two noisiest things that happened were, like you mentioned, the trucking company shutting down, some of the strikes. Those tend to be one-off events. I don't know if we're going to see a repeat of that next month or the following month. But if you were to take that out, the jobs numbers would have risen by 240,000. That paints a bit of a different picture than what we have.
Instead of 180,000, roughly, that it was up in the month, and some revisions to prior months, but certainly I think you look at, all right, what's the economy really look like? You can't just stare at one month and say this is what's happened. You really have to digest trend. You really have to understand what's going on underneath. We got some data on personal spending in the month of July. I think the challenge the Fed now faces is a lot of the data they're looking at is a couple months old already, and they're now going to be making a decision on rates this month with data that largely looks back to the middle of summer at a time when the economy may already look a little different. It's the ongoing problem the Federal Reserve faces is the data they're looking at is always dated. They do have access to some more real-time information. Certainly, the brain trust at the Federal Reserve has plenty of ways they can, I think, try to prognosticate, forecast where they think things are headed. But we had a PCE number for July come in at 3.3%. We all know the Fed's preferred measure, PCE. They'd like to see it too. 3.3 is certainly a higher number, Adam. But, you know, I think you look at interest rates this week, it tells you all you need to know that the market really isn't betting on the Fed having to go much further here.
No, and I don't think there's really much anticipation that the Federal Reserve is going to be raising rates here in September. Maybe, if anything, we get one later on this year, if at all at this point. The Federal Reserve realizes that they acted aggressively last year, raising rates seven times. And they're also well aware that there is a significant lag between when they act and when we ultimately start to feel it and it starts to materialize in the economy. On average, it can take somewhere between 12 and 18 months before higher interest rates really start to take hold in the economy. All the more reason for them to just kind of have pause with all of this and just wait for more data to roll in. Like you said, they're trying to drive forward while still looking in the rearview mirror. That's the best we got with the economic data. And so far, it looks like they're probably going to pause and hold off for rate increases this September.
Well, I know I can always count on you for some very vivid descriptions of what the Fed's trying to do, whether it's landing a plane in crosswinds or driving a car, through the rearview mirror.
It's funny you mention this. As we were prepping for the show, I looked back at my old review notes from a year ago, almost to the day. And I gave that example of the Federal Reserve trying to land this big giant jumbo jet on a narrow runway. Maybe I break that one out because it's a good example. And my dad will also appreciate this because it was an example that he got to correct me because I was wrong. A year ago, I was, as the Federal Reserve was raising interest rates, I was trying to explain to my dad, who's a pilot, what the Federal Reserve was trying to do and to do it in a way that he understood. So I said, look, the Federal Reserve is trying to aggressively land this big giant jumbo jet on a narrow runway with a stiff crosswind, and there's danger left and right. And if you're really trying to do that, you got to come in fast and hard, and you got to take the stiff crosswind out of the equation and try to land the jet. And he looked at me and he smiled because he got the analogy, and then he said, you know what, that's not entirely correct. If you're really trying to land a big jet with a stiff crosswind, the first thing you do is you tell your passenger, buckle up, this could get bumpy. And then he said, what you really do is you crab walk it in. You slip it in. That means the entire time that you're on final approach, the nose of the airplane is pointing somewhere other than down you know, the center line of the runway. And my golly, this entire past year, it feels as if the nose of this economy has been pointing some other direction than straight down the center line of the runway. And it's not until the last minute that a good pilot will snap that front end back around and land it on center line. We're not there yet, but I tell you what, that is a much better analogy to understanding what the Federal Reserve has been trying to do and how we have perceived this all along the way.
And of course, I hope that when your father's piloting that plane, he's not trying to do it with a rearview mirror, as I think we all know that planes generally don't have rearview mirrors. Kendall, a pretty good amount of data coming out of retailers on earnings season in the last week. We've gotten a pretty mixed bag. You know, July was a pretty good number for consumption, for personal consumption. A lot of people are calling it the Barbenheimer or Taylor Swift effect because of the Barbie movie, the Oppenheimer movie, all the Taylor Swift event tickets that are going on sale. Maybe they don't quite ring as true with those of us sitting around the table or those of us listening, but certainly I think to the populace more at large. And then we got news from some of the more traditional big box retailers that perhaps spending in some big ticket items had started to tail off. I think maybe some signs that consumers not quite as confident in the path forward from here.
Yeah, I think, you know, the consumer's feeling the impact of these rate hikes. As we pointed out early, there's a lag with some of this. And so I think we're seeing that now come through in some of the economic data and fundamentals that we look at and that we discuss. And I mean, you look at how the slowdown in housing with mortgage rates, where they are now, somewhere near 7.5%, even with vehicle purchase, and even some of the higher, you know, level clothing stores, you know, Lululemon, Abercrombie, Urban Outfitters, places like that, seeing consumers start to, you know, maybe tighten up their wallets a little bit.
You know, when I'm looking at consumer spending, you know, from month to month, it can be fickle, especially if you look at durable goods, because, you know, like 1 month your dishwasher breaks, you got to replace it. Next month you don't. Consumers have still been spending pretty good. And I think for me, it all comes down to a single economic point, that wages are rising faster than inflation. And that points to continued economic momentum, continued economic wellness, and wellness of the consumer as well. And for as long as we have continued steady job growth, it's going to be difficult to see the consumer cut back in light of all of that.
Yeah, hourly wages up 4.3% year over year in August, based on the data we got from the unemployment. And, you know, I think clearly that is a trend that we've had for the past few months now, that wages outpacing inflation seems to give those consumers more purchasing power. It gives them a little more hope that maybe they can grow real income, not just what they're seeing come, you know, in their paycheck, but what they actually can afford with that money. And so the hope is we can get a little more traction with that, keep those wage gains modest but high, and watch as inflation continues to come back towards that 2% target. And all of a sudden, you've got an economy that's got one extra little lever for growth that we haven't really had for the better part of the last couple of decades, as wages largely hadn't outpaced inflation for a while. You know, August, a pretty rough month for stocks relative to what we've seen for most of the year, maybe relative to history, not all that big a deal, Kendall. But, you know, as you look at maybe some of the benchmarks out there, things like the S&P taking away almost 1.6% in the month, what kinds of things are you looking at when you look at returns from August and then try to figure out, all right, what do we do from here?
Yeah, I think it's important not to let one maybe bad month overshadow really how great of a first half or slightly past first half of the year we've seen. And another good reminder that pullbacks, whether it's 3, 5, even 10%, in the midst of a run-up like we've seen, are perfectly normal and very much healthy from a pricing standpoint. But really, I couldn't be more thrilled, to be honest, Kyle, with where we are. And frankly, I've been encouraging clients whom, you know, it makes sense for, whether it's generating some cash needs for upcoming RMDs, for charitable gifting, to take some chips off the table and not let one bad month maybe scare you from doing that. And it's a great time to talk with your advisor, double check where your allocation is, And if it, you know, has crept up a little bit higher than your target, use it as an opportunity maybe to dial back a little bit.
And Adam, one of the things Kendall and I have, what we're talking about earlier today was this idea that when I go through a review with clients, I'll circle the number on their page that shows how much money they've made in a position just to show them, yeah, I'm trimming that growth fund or I'm trimming that stock fund, but I'm not taking it back to zero. I'm only taking back what you've made this year. We're just setting you back to that default position.
That has come up in so many reviews with customers. One of the things I've been pointing out is how much money you've made just year to date in your growth stock funds. In some cases, it could be 30, 40% growth in the first seven full months, eight full months of this year. And I like having the discussion, okay, well, why don't we just bring the allocation back to where it was on January 1st? Take your gain, say, thank you very much. That's been fun. And just bring that portion of the allocation back to where it was when we started the year.
You know, the one thing that we don't talk about all that often, but which I do look at pretty regularly, is how far we've come, both from a what was the last market peak perspective and how far are we still from that last peak. From a purely price perspective on the S&P 500, still about 6% below the prior peak. And so, you know, to your point, we're not doing anything other than setting you back to where we thought you should have been at the start of the year. Because there is still some upside from here. There's some things that we should be pretty excited about, and plenty of reason to think that if we get past some of the current uncertainty, it could be another strong run for stocks based on all of the innovation that's coming technologically, based on all of the opportunity that comes as earnings reemerge later this year.
Well, it's not just the technical stuff, but also the fundamentals. And for me, I think that's really where the rubber hits the road on this one. And interest rates and earnings, and we've talked about this for decades, and it seems like we talk about it on so many shows, but interest rates, as we sit this afternoon, 10-year Treasury, 4.1%, historically low borrowing costs for people and for businesses. Corporate earnings are expected to rise maybe somewhere between 8 and 10% in the fourth quarter this year. At some point, we look ahead to next year, earnings growth could be as high as 10 to 12% with revenue growth at 5%. So it could be the fundamentals as well, just things as simple as interest rates and earnings.
And a reminder to all our listeners that a couple of weeks from now, we'll be doing a seminar out at the former Country Springs, now the Ingleside. We'll have a newsletter coming out this afternoon with more details on how to register if you haven't already gotten a letter on that. Certainly feel free to reach out to us here at the firm, and we're happy to get you on the list. But would encourage you all to come and hear an update on what those fundamentals look like, about some of the opportunity set that's forward. Just as importantly, check out that newsletter that's coming out later on this afternoon. I think some good kind of information on the kinds of things that are pretty relevant to what we're looking at going forward. And with that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.